Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my dear friend Monty Yazzie is back to discuss the second half of this year's Welcome to the Blumhouse features. We're talking about Madres and the Manor, and Monty will also be giving us his insight on other movies similar to these that you might enjoy. I know I enjoyed his selections from last time. Hi, Monty. How are you?
Hi, Summer. Thank you for having me again. Really happy to be back to talk about these two movies. Always have a great time chatting with you.
I miss having more frequent discussions on horror, on sci-fi, on, I don't know, paranormal, whatever, you know, comic books even. I like geeking it up with other people who focus way too much of their lives on this kind of stuff as well as me. But, okay, for me, this year's selections, this year's films for Welcome to the Blumhouse seem to be stronger overall than last year's. Last year, I really, really enjoyed The Lie. I adored Evil Eye, even though I seem to be in the minority on that. I liked Black Box. I did not like Nocturne. I did not like that one at all. But I think my favorite out of last year was Evil Eye. And this year, I absolutely love Bingo Hell. I love The Manor. And Madres was not as strong, but it felt more intense to me.
Yeah, you know, I agree too. I think this set of films coming from Blumhouse is actually definitely stronger than the first set of films. I agree with you on Evil Eye as well too. I found some appreciation for that one. I think that The Manor is probably the strongest of all of the ones this year. I really connected with that movie and had a great time. I think the acting in that movie is really well done, and the ensemble cast is really good as well too. Madres surprised me. I wasn't expecting the kind of film that we got out of Madres. I went in really blind on that one. I didn't watch a trailer or anything for it. I just went in, turned it on, and was pretty surprised by the angle that it took, because I thought it was just going to kind of be a pregnant mom in distress kind of movies. But it definitely took a different turn and really got some important commentaries as well into the conversation on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't expect that turn, and the follow up after was one of those things where you go, "Wow, yeah, we have a ways to go if this stuff is still going on."
Oh yeah, very much. And but I appreciate that. I like it when horror films may come in and have a purpose and a clear intention that they're trying to get across. And I know we've talked many times about how in sci-fi, you know, movies can, the people have used the sci-fi genre to talk about, you know, social issues throughout time, whether that was in books or in film. Sci-fi has always been a vessel that we could use to discuss complicated manners. And I think horror can kind of do that same thing as well too, and has, you know, for many years. I always go back to looking at, you know, Romero's catalog of his films where he put zombies in his movies, but zombies weren't really the conversation. They were all commentaries on the world that we lived in. And I think, you know, some films do that better. Some films may take a more straightforward approach, which is what I think Madres is doing, where it's kind of really putting it on up front. Like, you know, we do have a purpose for this movie, and here's our purpose, is to bring some awareness to something that is very important and definitely critical in our time today in America.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing yet, but it's almost like some of the in-your-face social commentary elements that we saw in Get Out and that worked very well in Get Out maybe had a few films after that get a little heavy-handed on what they were trying to comment on, but Madres didn't. Madres actually led you. And I do mean just took your hand very gently, led you down this one path, having you think that what was going on was a curse, and then they threw a little red herring in there about potential environmental pollution. And then, not to give too much of a spoiler, but we find out it's malicious intent all along. And I was just like, whoa, nicely done. Nicely done.
Yeah, definitely a historical angle as well too, going back in time to discuss some pertinent issues that happened, and then connecting it again to modern, discussions about how, these sins of the past are still being committed today. And I know we are tiptoeing around, the intention of this movie quite a bit, but I think it's going to definitely surprise people when they go and watch it. And whether or not they have the kind of effect that I had, which is I'm glad that, Madres exists, and I'm glad that it is bringing, some awareness to something that may be overlooked amongst the many, many things that we have to deal with in America today. I don't mind that at all, the fact that we use the horror film to kind of bring some awareness to something very important.
Yeah, and I think bringing the awareness to not only what happened, but A, the fact that it's still happening, and B, the fact that the people perpetrating this particular form of violence have never been charged, never been arrested, never been indicted. They just get a pass and they keep doing it. And I'm like, what part of justice do you not understand? I mean, it's right there, truth, justice in the American way. And it seems the older I get, the more I start to lose hope and faith that truth and justice and the American way don't mean anything anymore, that nobody is trying to make that mean something. And that's really depressing. And it's if it takes a horror movie to get people to take more positive action to stop these things from happening, or to legislate criminal to actually prosecute, pursue and prosecute the people doing these things because, hey, it's illegal. Then, let's go get us some more horror movies that put that sort of injustice in more people's faces.
Yeah, it's important, I think, too, to understand that, history is consistently being rewritten. And, whether that, and I'm not saying like we're getting rid of the big things, we're just forgetting. And, the people that are writing the history books and the people that are putting them together are rewriting history in a way that is forgetting about these important things, these injustices, these travesties against a group of people, these issues where America may not have looked the best, may have a very big black eye for how they treated a particular group of people. And
Multiple, multiple groups of people.
multiple groups of people. And I talk about it consistently, where from the Native American perspective, and there is definitely a rewriting of history where we talk about treaties differently in different history books, and we talk about the way Native Americans are treated a different way. And at the end of the day, it's colonialism. At the end of the day, it's a group of people saying, this is now mine and it's not yours anymore. And no matter how you cut that up, it at the end of the day is that exactly that exact thing. And there's no other way to slice it, that it is a group of people who came into a land that was not theirs and said, this land is mine now, and you guys have to go somewhere else. And, I get so upset when Thanksgiving comes around and everybody talks about how this wonderful peace existed between people new to America and the indigenous people that were here in America. And we just kind of have this great, wonderful Thanksgiving dinner where, oh, everybody lived in peace. And yeah, that's a wonderful sentiment for people to have, that peace is achievable, but not at the expense of looking over what really happened throughout history to that particular group of people. And at the end of the day, that is why people will say, Monty, how come you don't celebrate Thanksgiving like everybody else? Or how come you don't think about Thanksgiving the same way that everybody else does? And yeah, it would be so easy for me to take, the fun, warm sentiments that people associate with Thanksgiving and make it my own. But as an indigenous person, it means so much different, something so much different. And, for films like Madres and films like Get Out and other films of those kind that are attacking and looking at a specific issue that is happening to a particular group of people, it's important that we remember those things and that those things don't go away. And history is different for different people. So, I will never give somebody a hard time for celebrating a holiday a certain way. And, we just had a lot large portion of America celebrate Columbus Day. And you wonder why Native American people don't celebrate Columbus Day, right? Well, that's an opportunity for you to pick up a book and really look at like the truth behind why Native Americans feel a certain way about Columbus Day, and why they feel a certain way about Thanksgiving, and why they feel a certain way about many things that history has rewritten and from a kinder eye. So that's my long rant about that subject matter. But watching a film like Madres, even with I don't think Madres is executed completely effectively all the way through, but at the end of the day, their message is very clear. And I cannot fault a movie for for trying to get a message out into the world. And they do so in such a clear way. Like you said, they are laying that hand on you pretty heavy about what their message is at the end of the film. And I think there's part of that really helps to heighten the material that they're working with. And there's a part of that almost prevents the film from really falling into like a truth, like not truthful, but falling into those realms of like being able to bring out those horror movie characteristics clearer and, allow for that suspense to build and allow for that thriller aspects to build, because it does come out firing from the very beginning. Like, oh, we're going to talk about this subject matter, and we're gonna dissect it a little bit through this film. And I accommodate the filmmakers for doing it that way. Even if their execution isn't completely effective 100% of the way through.
Well, myself and a couple of my cousins, we celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day rather than Columbus Day. And the rewriting of history got me thinking. And I would love to see someone more creative and more snarky than myself rewrite a couple of the history stories we learn in grade school from the opposite perspective, but in the format of a Reddit r/ entitled people post.
Oh man.
I can't get that out of my head. I'm like, yeah, what if we wrote the first Pilgrim Thanksgiving from the entitled people perspective? I'm like, oh my God, that would be hilarious. And so that would be an inciting incident, I believe. But yeah, there's humor to be found there, I believe. Anyway.
Yeah. I think it's funny too that we bring up that history component, rewriting history, because Quentin Tarantino has made revisionist history in his movies. Inglourious Basterds, re-envisions a ending for Hitler, and in his recent Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he re-envisions a alternative ending for for you know what ultimately happened for Charles Manson's followers, as well as Sharon Tate and just the awful and tragic thing that happened to her and her friends that night in Hollywood. So,
Why would you want to revisionist history, the Tate LoBianco murders? I mean, I just, from my perspective, I'm like, why was that a thing you felt you needed to do? I mean, if you really want to go into something, look at a Hollywood murder that's still unsolved. You got the Black Dahlia. You got what's his name? Robert Crane from Hogan's Heroes. Go dig into one of those and throw out a speculation because those are really still unsolved.
Yeah, definitely. I think, for Tarantino's purposes, for that whole reason, is because, that the Sharon Tate, Charles Manson moment in history really changed kind of the landscape of Hollywood and changed kind of that, that there's a kind of the changing of an era at that time as well, too, that was, that was the moment in time when, we transitioned from this place in time into a new place in time. And re-envisioning it and through a different lens, really, like, I think there's a piece of that for at least for me as a film buff that wonders, like, oh, like, if Sharon Tate was still alive, like, where would she have gone with her career? Because she was so talented, and like, what would have happened to Charles Manson's movement if that had happened to his followers the way it did? But you're exactly right too, there is an opportunity for re-envisionist history to really tackle some things that don't get, talked about a whole lot. And, the Charles Manson, the Sharon Tate, that night has been dissected by people a thousand different ways. And it almost feels like, that there was opportunity to do something a little different. So I do agree with that, even though I do really, really like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Cool. Well, are there any films that touch on social commentary or have a similar feel as Madres that you would recommend people check out?
So for Madres, the thing that I the obvious tone that I get from that movie in what it's trying to do as a horror film is like that pregnant woman in peril kind of film. And before we get to like the recommendations on like commentary, I think, looking at what the film's trying to do genre wise is really important. So before Madres goes into its ultimate purpose of why it's trying to tell the story it's trying to tell, it at first it's using the vessel of a woman in horror, a woman who is pregnant, who happens to be in a supernatural experience, as the vessel to tell that story. So I often think about these, there's quite a few pregnant horror films that are out there. The first one obviously that people think about is Rosemary's Baby. I always think about this movie from 1977 called Demon Seed, which is a little bit more sci-fi horror put together. And then I think about Cronenberg's The Brood as well too, where there that one isn't necessarily following anyone or a person who's pregnant, but is uncovering like this really like kind of creepy psychological dysfunctional family kind of film. But my favorite, from that time is a movie from 2009 called Grace. And Grace is a movie about an expectant mother who discovers that her daughter Grace has died in the womb. And instead of taking care of any, instead of moving forward with what medical professionals would tell her to do, she ignores those warnings and continues to allow Grace to have time in her body. And I don't want to give away too much about it, but it is a very intense film. And I've often told people, like pregnant women, I said, if you come across a movie called Grace and you're pregnant, please do not watch it. Like, stay far, far away from that movie and just keep going forward with your wonderful pregnancy. But Grace is definitely a movie that caught me off guard. And we played it at the festival back in 2009. And at the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival, and it really like brought down the house. And it was really interesting to hear the director talk about this film and, really discuss like the trauma that he had gone through and the trauma of where the story came from and everything. And but I think that's a great movie to pair with this one. On the other side of it, with the commentary, the social commentary that the film is trying to get across with Madres, I think you hit a couple of great, key films that are important to talk about. Like I think, Get Out would pair very nice with this. I think even like a film like The New Candyman would pair nice with this, where they're trying to bring this idea of like history back into relevance with with a modern day horror film. So the movie that I would recommend to pair with Madres is a UK film called Prevenge. Prevenge is from 2017 and it is a horror comedy first, but it talks about a very pregnant and grieving single mom who ends up committing murders on the behest on because of her killer fetus. And it is really focused on commentary about like what it is, what it means to be a mom, and also society's inclinations to how mom should be, and the expectations, the misogynistic expectations of pregnant women. But that's definitely a film that came to mind when I thought about this. And then moving kind of forward a little bit, that a movie that is less about pregnancy and social commentary, and just more about what it means to, be a female in the world today. I always go back to this movie called Ginger Snaps from
Oh, yeah.
2001. Remember that movie? Ginger Snaps
Yeah.
was a horror, horror during a time of puberty kind of film. And it is definitely one of those films that has stuck with me because I think since the time it came out, it continues to morph and change into something that I think can bring about more commentary as to how we treat young people and, the expectations that are on young people, especially for young female women when they are going through puberty and they have a wealth of maturity that is happening to them at that time. I think there's a lot to be found in, kind of that idea of what it means to be a girl and then what it means to be a woman. And how, when you become a woman, there is a wealth of expectations that fall on the shoulders of women that don't fall on the shoulders of men when boys become men. And the weight of that, of those expectations, many of them unjustly put on women, can definitely bring about, some pieces for what it means to be a woman that it can become just overwhelming. When you think about like what women have to go through just because of what society says and how they feel women should be. So those would be like a wealth of, I know I talked about quite a few of them there, but those would be the ones that I would think about in terms of, what might pair well with Madres when you're looking to maybe do that late night double feature.
Well, I will list those out for people to check out with. That's
Yes,
a.
please. The viewer cautions are important, but Prevenge is the one that is the comedy slash horror, and then the movie Grays, while intense as well, really does like, make it's more tragic and more, it doesn't become really horrific until like the final little pieces of it, but definitely both of those films are not for pregnant women. But even there's a piece of Madres that I think isn't for pregnant women as well too. I just think pregnant women should stay far away from any horror films that deal with pregnancy if they are pregnant.
Okay, so moving on to our next and final Blumhouse. Welcome to the Blumhouse feature for this year, The Manor. And The Manor is loaded. It starts out looking like a story about elder abuse. And we have countless stories of elderly folks who are in residential homes and nursing homes who are being neglected and worse. And this sort of goes in that direction, but takes a very distinct horror supernatural turn and two twists that I did not see coming, and that kind of make the story even better. Even if it goes darker, it's better. And this was such a delight to watch because of the breadth and experience of the talent in the film.
Oh yes, Barbara Hershey. Barbara Hershey in this film, probably the best performance of all the movies that we've watched in this this round of Blumhouse films that are coming out. Barbara Hershey is just, you know, her career in film and, you know, the many, many movies that she has been in, you know, it's just an experience of acting that is just like, I mean, it's amazing how many movies she's been in. And not to mention just like, you know, not even just the horror films that she's been in, but, you know, everything else that she's been in throughout her career. And to see her in this film, you know, where she is now playing very specifically her age with her gray hair and looking a little bit more frail than many have seen Barbara Hershey, but still absolutely stunning and still very, very beautiful. She is captivating the entire time. She does such a great job in this movie, and I really love seeing her here. And then the supporting cast is also really great as well, too. You got Bruce Davison playing a supporting role, as well as, I forget the actress's name. Let me remember her name. Fran Bennett, that's her name. Fran Bennett is a actress that when you see her, you'll remember her from a bunch of movies. And unfortunately, she just passed away, I think, in September of this year. But I always remember her from the Wes Craven's New Nightmare, where she plays a doctor in that movie that at one point in time turns into Freddy Krueger. And there's this great scene where she has this wonderful line in that movie. But yeah, I remember Fran Bennett and it from a bunch of different movies. But yeah, the supporting cast for this show is just fantastic. And I think director Axel Carolyn does such a great job. I really following Axel's career as a director and what she has done, you know, from her television work to, you know, all the way up to what she's doing now. And it's wonderful to see this movie really, I mean, I really just showcase her talents as a director.
So what for you was the most, I guess, interesting or intriguing part of The Manor?
I particularly like the idea of this woman who, you know, has a stroke at the beginning of the film and is then placed into a elder care facility. But just that fish out of water kind of idea about her, and then, you know, the utterly traumatizing component of people not believing her, not believing that she's having these experiences. And, you know, you can kind of hint at that idea that, you know, maybe dementia is setting in, and those cross pieces between like what people go through, what elder people go through as they age, and have to be put in these, you know, these full-time care facilities. It really like is emotional when you think about that. And I know that, you know, this movie is like, has of course that underlying horror component, but the pieces of like those ideas of what it means to age and, you know, to age and become comfortable with, you know, growing old, and, you know, what it means to kind of be put into a place where somebody has to care for you 100% of the time. You know, there are some parallels that can be very emotional in that idea, especially paired with, you know, some of the horror that that is coming through in this film. And I wasn't expecting it to be that emotional. But I, you know, maybe, and that's my personal experience is, you know, in my daily life, I work with elder people a lot. So we have to have conversations about, you know, aging and understanding the limitations that are coming on you. And, you know, and really specifically, like I think about, you know, the conversation I have with many elder people where we have to discuss things like what it means to fall, right? That's something that we don't think about now. Like, you know, if I fell today, I'd get up and at that moment just keep going. But for elder people, falling could be, you know, extremely tragic for them. And falling, you know, for elder people is one of the leading causes of death, you know, for older people. And the fact that that idea of like, if you fall, you can't get yourself up on your own, is very difficult to talk about with elder people. And it becomes a component of fear for them that, you know, becomes tragic. And in this movie, they do have some of those moments where you'll see some of these elder people fall and you'll see them having difficulty getting up, or you'll see, you know, this idea that no one believes them, and that, you're just having a bad dream, or, you're just, you know, you didn't see what you really saw. It's this tragic idea that these elders that we should hold as, you know, these history keepers and these people who could supply generations now with the wisdom, you know, that of life, of experience, the wisdom of living a full life, that sometimes they're, you know, relinquished to, you know, almost not even being heard by people at times. And those components, I think Axel Carolyn, you know, with her script here has really kind of, you know, brought in some of those pieces to really flesh out this horror film that is being told.
Yeah, it's a concept that is ripe to be explored using horror as a framework, because that's one thing that everybody is going to go through. You're going to get older. You're going to reach a point, either through just advanced age or maybe injury or illness, where you're going to need help from someone to take care of you. And the fear of the loss of that independence, the fear of strangers being relied upon to take care of you because your family members either don't have the space, don't have the time, don't have the money to do it themselves, you feel like you're being thrown away, and you're still alive. You still have a mind. You still have knowledge. You still have feelings. And that is a horrific thought when you dive into it. It's like, I'm being cast aside because the world thinks I don't have any value anymore. And since I'm being tossed aside, it doesn't matter how I'm treated. And, you know, it does matter. So you have to wonder, what's going to happen? Who's going to be taking care of me? What kind of person is this? Is this a kind, gentle nurse? Or is this someone training to be a serial killer? You don't know.
Oh yeah, definitely. There is a lot to be mined, you know, from this movie. And I think, you know, if audiences going, you know, kind of understanding, you know, that there is this component of, like, you know, aging, and that in ultimately the process of becoming comfortable with growing old and the horrors that can come along with that as well too, it makes it all the more affecting. But yeah, definitely. I think, you know, with the performances in this film, you know, the script that is really kind of layering in those emotional pieces. I think, you know, of all the Blumhouse films that came out this year, I would definitely think that The Manor is the strongest of all of them. And the one that I think really caught me off guard because, you know, even knowing about it, and I actually did see the trailer before I watched this movie, it still, like, had a very emotional effect on me. Yeah, a little, maybe even more so than the horror elements. I felt the emotional components of this film a lot more.
What to do, what to do. I don't know. Interesting. So, in terms of the horrors of elder care, you have any stories, any other films for us?
I do. There's a 2014 film called The Taking of Deborah Logan. And The Taking of Deborah Logan it's a film about a group of students who want to create a documentary about an elderly woman who has Alzheimer's disease, and the increasingly bizarre actions and issues that Deborah goes through during the course of this documentary. But also like the idea that someone has to care for that person who is dealing with Alzheimer's. And in this film it's a caregiver who really it portrays like this idea of like the caring of somebody who has something as terrible as Alzheimer's is a 24/7 job. And you have to dedicate yourself to that person. And if that person is family and you're trying to take care of that family member, there's even more emotional components that come into that, having to watch a loved one completely change and for become forgetful and become detached. But the Taking of Deborah Logan takes it one step forward, because the Taking of Deborah Logan is really scary. So there's this piece of like, you get to kind of see this woman change, but then you're also supplied with a horror film that does have some striking frights in it. But that was definitely the one that came to mind first. That movie came out in 2014, and again, it's called The Taking of Deborah Logan. I think it does a great job in kind of displaying this idea of like aging and disease and what it means to care for somebody who's going through something as terrible as Alzheimer's. But that's definitely the one that comes to mind first and foremost. And then I think I recommended this for Bingo Hell as well too. But let's say you don't want to go the scary route. You don't want to go, watch, The Manor and then follow it up with something like The Taking of Deborah Logan. There's always horror comedy, and Bubba Ho-Tep seems to pair really nicely with a lot of movies that we have this year. And I just think, Bubba Ho-Tep again is taking that idea of being in a care facility, and kind of being the investigator as to why some terrible things are happening to people. And Barbara Hershey takes a very a much more straightforward, non-comedic approach with her investigation of what's happening to a resident that happens to be in the same room as her, where Bubba Ho-Tep, of course, is going for pure comedy and definitely more silly and goofiness. But those might pair very well. Maybe you don't want all of the deeper frights that go along with caring for somebody who is aging. Maybe you wanted to go with a film where your aging character thinks he's Elvis and is played by the exhilarating and often exceptional Bruce Campbell in the lead role. But I would think one either of those two would work really well.
Cool. And just to remind people, we have two separate Slice of Sci-Fi episodes, one containing interviews with everyone from the Manor, writer director Axel Carolyn and Barbara Hershey and Bruce Davison, and another episode featuring interviews with principals from Madres. The two co-writers, Marcelo Ochoa and Mario Michion, plus Ariana Guerra, who plays Diana, and Evelyn Gonzalez, who plays Marisol, her friend. So those I will have links to also. And hearing both Barbara and Bruce talk about how fun it was to play in the Manor was a lot of fun. And I honestly can't wait to see what XL does next. I think she had an episode of the in the new season of Creepshow just come out. So.
I can't. I just love seeing all those people in film, and Barbara Hershey's definitely one of those people that I'm always really delighted to see in movies. So I'm glad that she's still doing a lot of stuff, and I'm really happy that she's embracing the horror community and continuing to do these fine horror films.
Cool. Well, Monty, I want to thank you so much for sharing your insights on both these two movies and last week's movies, the entire slate of 2021 Welcome to the Blumhouse Films.
Thank you so much, Summer. I love talking to you about movies and discussing all of these wonderful things, and extremely fortunate and happy to have this opportunity.
Well, like I said, we'll have links to Monty's recommendations plus the episodes with the interviews. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
The lonely alien pet bravely waits for the family that may never return. An astronaut with seconds to live discovers just how good victory can taste. A mecha pilot and an aristocrat strike up an unlikely friendship. Take a ride with Escape Pod, the Hugo-nominated weekly science fiction podcast, at escapepod.org. Every week will launch you into an alternate reality, so buckle up, it's story time.
Hey folks, this is Bruce Campbell, and this is my podcast. Thank you very much.
And once again, the movies for this year's slate of Welcome to the Blumhouse features are Bingo Hell, Blackest Night, Madres, and The Manor. We have interviews with cast and writers and directors from all four movies, which will be linked to from the show notes, or you can just find them in the feed for this podcast. And I want to thank Monty again, the program director for the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival every year out in Phoenix, associated with the Phoenix Film Festival, and his horror movie insights. We'll also have links to the movies he recommended both this week and last week. And if you have any questions about any of the Blumhouse films or in suspense, thriller, horror in general, shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. Or come on by the website, sliceofscifi.com. Leave a comment in the episodes that you have questions about, or just hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Slice of Sci-Fi there, and yes, I do get into conversations about television, movies, occasionally comics. It's all good fun, right? You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving us a review. Help raise our profile so that more people come to check out the show. And you can also leave a review or a rating over at Podchaser. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support our efforts here in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, which includes the podcasts and websites for Slice of Sci-Fi, Writers After Dark, Babylon Podcast, Charlie Jade, and a host of other podcasts and fun geeky websites. Stay online with your help. Your donations through Ko-fi and PayPal, your pledges through Patreon, all of those really, really help offset the costs for keeping all of that information online for you and others to enjoy. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier, and you will be eligible for perks. Everyone who's in the perks program, I pick an email address out of the hat every month, and that person gets to choose from a DVD, a Blu-ray, a 4K, or a book. And That is my way of saying thank you for your support. And it also helps keep my shelves clean because I can't keep all of the review materials I do receive. So you're helping keep my shelves neat and getting goodies as well. Still figuring out how to exactly work in the coffee donations, but you know, it's a work in progress. And if you prefer to just donate every now and then without committing to a perks program, the place to go is paypal.me/scifisummer. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.